Perhaps hearing the change in her voice, Bandit barked. The hitchhiker jumped, turning in his seat. The boxer barked a second time, louder than the first. "You have a dog?" he said, facing forward again. Under different circumstances, Katrina would have said, "He's harmless." Yet. Hello and welcome, I'm Douglas Bowles, and this is 42 Minutes, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day, a production of SyncBook Radio and distributed by thesyncbook.com. You can find our archives at 42minutes.com, and you can reach us by sending a message to mail at 42minutes.com. You can also follow our tweets at Sync42 and at SyncBook. It's Tuesday, July 11th, and this morning we're going to consider the horror a little by meeting and discussing writing with Jeremy Bates. Jeremy Bates is a USA Today best-selling author of more than a dozen novels and novellas, which have been translated into several languages and downloaded more than 1 million times. Midwest Book Review compares his work to Stephen King and other masters of the art. He has won both an Australia Shadows Award and a Canadian Arthur Ellis Award. He was also a finalist in the Goodreads Choice Awards, the only major book award decided by readers. His debut novel reached number one in the Amazon Kindle store, while the novels in the World's Scariest Places series are set in real locations and so far include Suicide Forest in Japan, The Catacombs in Paris, Helltown in Ohio, and the Island of Dolls in Mexico. You can check out any of these places on the web or find out more information on the author's Wikipedia page. Also, for a limited time, the author is offering 2 book downloads for free on his website, jeremybatesbooks.com. It's late where you're at and early for me. How's it going today?
Yeah, it's good. No, it's good. Yeah, very good.
Excellent.
Yep. I've had my coffee. I've had my whole day.
So I'm
up and ready for this. Yep.
Well, so I tasted a number of your works, and this show in particular likes to play with the idea of synchronicity. But one of the interesting synchronicities right off the bat was I was reading White Lies a little, and it's set in the Cascades or Leavenworth, Washington.
Yeah, the Cascade Mountains. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where Twin Peaks is filmed. Have you ever watched that show? A lot of people in the States are buzzing about Twin Peaks right now.
No, I haven't. This is the whole thing with Twin Peaks. Wasn't it a show back in the 80s? Have they done a rethink of it?
Exactly.
I know it used to be like, yeah.
It came out in like 89. It was like 2 seasons, like 89 and 90, and then 25 years went by, and they did what amounts to a reboot of it with the same actors.
Yeah, I sort of know what it's about. I've never really watched it. I missed the Twilight Zone and stuff, but I was into The Outer Limits. If you ever watched The Outer Limits back in, I think it was in the 90s or whatever, I used to watch that show, which was sort of the weird twist psychedelic type thing. But no, I never watched Twin Peaks, but I knew of it in the past, and then I thought I heard they came up with something relatively recently, but no, I haven't seen it.
Well, then, when choosing a setting for one of your books, is it that it just kind of arrives to you, or some place that you think you'd like to visit, and then you explore it in your writing?
No, okay. With the White Lies, which that's what you were reading at the beginning, that one was actually my first book. And the reason I said it there pretty simply was because I'm Canadian. I live in Australia, but I'm Canadian. But I figured, you know, a setting in the U.S. would sell better than a setting in Canada. And it's true. There's a bigger audience and all that. So instead of setting something in like Vancouver or whatever, I set it in the Cascade, yeah, in Washington. But that was with that book. The main series, like The World's Scariest Places, like Suicide Forest, Catacombs, Helltown, whatever. Those ones are easy because if you do like a search on the internet for like scariest places on earth, you'll get you'll get lists like guys on YouTube sort of like compile them or other people compile them. And it's actually pretty easy to sort through them and find a location. And once you have a location, then you just sort of write the story. So that's made it a lot easier. Yeah.
Do you have a, will that series continue, the scariest places? And what are some of the other scary places that you're thinking about writing about?
Well, hopefully it's going to continue. So it's up to number five right now. But there's four out there. There's, like I said, Suicide Forest, Catacombs, Helltown, and Island of the Dolls. I've just finished one. The fifth one is called Mountain of the Dead, Mountain of the Dead, and it's this one's actually the first one that's actually based on not just a real location, but a real event that's happened. So, if you searched on the internet about the Dyatlov, I think that's how you pronounce it, but the incident in 1959, there were like nine Russian hikers who went up into the mountains. They died, some from the extremities, from the temperature or whatever, but some from like crazy, gruesome, terrible injuries. And nobody, like in the last 50, 60 years, nobody has put up an explanation for that. No, there's just no answer to it. And then there's a whole thing, there's a whole conspiracy thing going on the web about what happened. That's what drew me into the thing. So then when I started researching, I got drawn more and more into it, and I said, yeah, this is pretty neat. So that's the fifth one right now. And it's not out yet because it's sort of in limbo with maybe an agent or whatever, but it's continuing the series, I guess. So it will continue the series. So that's number five.
Well, so the thing that I notice when I look at your bibliography is how prolific a writer you are.
Yeah.
So, White Lies came out in 2012. What year did you write White Lies?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's funny. Oh my God, I got to do the math. I think it was about 2007, 2000. Like it was about 5, 6, 7 years before it actually came out with Ocean View Publishing. I was living in Japan at the time. I was teaching English, and was a few years out of university. I had been writing for a few years, and I came up with this one. And I actually had a really good agent. It was the first big agent I had. They were I don't even know how to pronounce it, McIntosh and Otis or something like that. But they signed me for that one, and then it's pretty exciting and everything. But I got an email like publishing's so slow, and I got an email like 3 months later or something like that, and they said, look, publishing's tough. We're not going to publish it. We can't. Nobody bit or whatever." And so then I put it on. I just forgot about it for like 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 years. I don't know. And I was doing some other stuff, just writing other stuff that wasn't published. And then when that wasn't published, you start getting frustrated. So I said, all right, I'm going to take this one out again. So I took that out again. By that time, I was a bit better writer, so I rewrote it, and I pitched it to the publisher. Eventually published it, Ocean View Publishing. And they have a thing on their website which says they only accept agented work, like you need an agent or whatever. I didn't have an agent for that at the time, but I still did it, and I guess they sort of got through the firewall, and they published it. So that was the first book. That was sort of fun, and it wasn't a they're a really good publisher. They weren't one of the big five, but they were a good mid-sized publisher, and that's sort of where I started writing. I mean, after that, after that, I started putting stuff out more and more on a regular basis.
What is your practice, your writing practice like? Is it Is it something you do every single day for a number of hours, or is it when you're inspired, or what does that look like?
No, it's every day. I've heard this so many times, and if anybody who writes and stuff is listening to this, then they probably heard this 1,000 times. The only way, when you're writing, the only way you get better is by writing, and the only way you get better writing is by reading. So you do it all the time. You read, you write, you read, you write. So you pretty much have to make it a daily thing. Some days you don't. Some days, I don't know if you're hungover or whatever, you might take a day off. But yeah, it has to be routine. It has to be something you do every day, because if you don't, you just it's not really easy. It's pretty boring a lot of the times. It's exciting when you get going, but a lot of the times it's hard work. So if you don't just sit down and force yourself to do it, so for example, to answer your question, a couple of months ago I was in the Philippines for a friend's wedding, and I was finishing my last book. And I used to live in the Philippines, and it was I like it over there. But this time when I was in the Philippines, it was sort of work, and it in the sense that I'd go to the cafe for 2 hours in the morning, force myself to write like in a Starbucks, and then come home, do whatever, and then after lunch try and go out for another 2, 3 hours, and just sometimes you're sitting there staring at the wall, but for most of the time you're just writing. And then when you're done and you feel like you've done 4 or 5 hours a day, it's like, because it's sort of a job, so you feel like you've done your 5 hours. It's not 8 hours, but you've done your 5 hours, and you can get on with the rest of the evening or whatever. So yeah, it is something that you have to do every day. It's if you want to make it a job, I guess, if you want to put it that way.
And then with that, do you work on one work at a time, or do you work on whatever's calling you in the moment?
No, one work at a time. But it's sort of like I'll do like one. The way I've sort of gone with it is like I'll do a big book, like a not a big book, like a book, like a novel length book, like One of the World's Scariest Places or White Lies or whatever. And that takes a long time. That takes like close to a year or whatever. But then when that's done, in between that, I'll try and write like one or two little novellas, just to because well, to be honest, it's a lot easier and it's quicker, and it gets sort of it still keeps your name, it keeps you up like on Amazon or whatever, it keeps re like it's, there's something out there, and then you get back into the big book, and that's the big grind again, but it's one at a time. Yeah.
White Lies, you said that was your first work, and then you rewrote it and it was published. Did you rewrite it again and then it became an audiobook, or is that there's what could you explain that chronology a little bit? And then what is it
Yeah.
like? What is it like to have your book become an audio work?
Yeah. So that's interesting, the chronology there, but because it was, yeah, it was rewritten, and then I'm not really supposed to talk about it because I signed some disclosure thing, but I got the rights back, and the audio part of it is there's two things to that. Like I thought it was pretty cool. Like that's the first and only book that I have audio for. One, because the publishers did that, and they're American or whatever. And that was sort of neat. But a lot of people now are doing audio with their books, but you actually have to be an American citizen. I'm not sure if because the big thing that everybody goes through is the Amazon publish the audio thing that Amazon has, but you actually have to be an American citizen to, like, and pay your taxes in the States to do that, and have a bank account in the States. So I can't do that. And like people in the UK, Australia, Canada, whatever, can't do that. So right now, like I would like to, I'd like to, because if I could, I would do it with some of my other ones because it's a whole new market. It's a whole new thing. But right now I can't do that. You either need a publisher who's based in the States, or you either have to be an author who's living in the States to do that. But it's pretty neat. But to tell you the truth, you actually have to get a good reader, like or audio or whoever, voice person, because I've heard good and bad. I liked how they I did White Lies, I guess, but I've heard some funny stuff that doesn't really match with the story. So yeah, you have to get lucky or hit it on the head with that.
And so when you edit, do you read your work aloud or do you read it? Are you able to hear the sentences in your head?
No, it's all in the head. Otherwise, people think I'm crazy because I usually write at like a McDonald's or something. So if I was sitting there with a coffee and just, reading out loud, it's all in the head. The funny thing was, a while back, I thought it'd be so much easier to do it. There's this like voice program called Dragon something or whatever, where you can actually dictate to the computer, and they're smart enough now that they can translate that and put it on in Word or whatever. I tried that because I thought it'd be a lot less. Because this is the thing that I guess people maybe don't understand with writing is that it's exhausting. Like sitting there, and if you're writing a short story or whatever, it's not so bad. Or if you're writing like your resume or whatever, you just a couple pages. But if you're sitting there, and your goal is to write 400 pages of a story, and you're starting it, and there's zero, there's nothing on the page. And then even when you get into it, and it doesn't really go well at the beginning because nothing's really formed in your head. It's exhausting, and it's like physically exhausting, like you're sitting there. So I thought, if you could dictate it, it'd be a lot easier than just I don't know, like you're on the X, you're on the run, the bike or something, and you're dictating your story. But so I tried that program, and it just didn't recognize me. I gave that up. No, I don't read it out loud. It's just like it's all in your head. That's why writers, yeah, that's why most writers are a bit loopy sometimes because everything's in their head, replaying over and over and over.
Well, then, what was it the experience like to hear White Lie? Or have you heard White Lies as an audio book?
I heard the first. Honestly, I heard the first paragraph, and that's it. Because I was with my friend back in the Philippines again. So this is when it first came out. I was really excited. I was excited enough to probably just sit down and listen to the whole thing. But I was sitting with my friends. We're having a couple of beers or whatever. And I said, "Hey, they just sent me this. Do you want to hear it?" And it's like the book's in audio now, and that was really cool at the time. So he's like, "Yeah." So I put it on, and for that novel, because the main see, this is the funny thing too, because most of the books I write, there the it's the protagonist now is usually a male, a guy, but for that one it was a female. So they had to choose a female protagonist to be the reader for the audiobook. So so we were sitting down with a couple of beers, and then the introduction came on, and then this woman came on and she read the first paragraph. I think it went still like I can pretty much recite the first paragraph of all my books, and that's it. It goes blur from there. But the first one, they're on a highway. It was a raining, stormy night, and this and this. But it was all in this woman's voice, and I guess she was pretty good. But my friend just looked at me and said, "What the hell is this?" And I was like, "Oh man, I don't like because it, I don't know. It just sounded, It sounded like, your babe, my like a babysitter reading the book. I don't know. It just sounded really weird. So after that first paragraph, I haven't listened to anything. So I don't know how it turned out, but yeah.
Yeah, that's
I think
interesting.
that's the whole point. You have to get the right person to read the book. You have to get it's when you write a book and it's just words, because those words are in the person's head. So they're making the voice, they're making the sound, they're doing all that for you. When it's an audiobook, you have somebody, putting the like speaking to you. So you really have to get the right person, otherwise it just sounds silly.
Yeah. Well, how about when you are inspired to write something, to whether it's a novella or a novel, is it a character that calls to you, or like a big idea that you want to explore? What was it? What was the inspiration for White Lies? What was it that, prompted you to sit down and write the whole thing?
Yeah, it's always a hook. The hook with White Lies was pretty simply like, what if you told a lie, white lie or whatever, and it spiraled out of control and got worse and worse and worse and worse. The toughest thing I found actually was trying to figure out those hooks when you don't know what you're writing about. So with White Lies, this was when I was, I think like I was 25 or something. I didn't know what I was writing. I had no idea. Like I had no identity as a writer or whatever. So I was just trying to think of something catchy, and you have to, think of something that agents are going to like and whatever. It was a huge chore. And then same with the second book after that, Taste of Fear, and that was a bit different. So all those books are sort of different, and that was the hard part, trying to find this hook. But then the interesting thing is that once you find what you want to write about, it's so much easier. So like if you take like guys like Robert B. Parker or like what, Stephen King, I guess, or Lee Child or whatever, these guys who have a character. This is why authors write. They like, maybe not Stephen King, but the other guys, they keep writing in a series or do whatever, because once you know the character and once the setting and everything, writing a story is so much easier, because you're not thinking of, you still have to think of that hook, but you're not thinking of this whole universe or whatever. So I found like with the first two standalone books, like White Lies and The Taste of Fear, I had no idea really, like those are, the White Lies is psychological suspense, I guess. And then Taste of Fear was more action adventure, like totally different. And publishers don't want anything to do with that, because they're just like, these are, you're not, you're just writing to create different audiences. So I found, and they were really hard to come up with stories or do whatever. But then when I came up with the one for Suicide Forest, because I was living in Japan, I was teaching over there. And I was there, and I always thought that would be a cool story. And then I came up with that idea for the scariest places, and I just had to choose a scary place. Once I had that down, to tell you the truth, it's so much easier. It's just really, really easy now to write a story, because, well, it's not easy, but it's a lot easier than it used to be, because I know what I'm doing. I know the audience, sort of, and I know the structure of those, and I know what I'm writing, and I know that I can keep going with this genre or do whatever, and that makes a ton of difference. It makes it much easier.
And then, as a writer, do you feel like in that process you've kind of found your voice? And then, does that voice end up being pigeonholed into like a specific genre, or do you write all over the place? I mean, so like
Well, no, yeah.
that's the
Yeah.
interesting thing to me, where on the outside someone might think, oh, this guy's a horror writer, or this guy's a suspense writer, or this guy, writes thrillers or whatever, but how do you describe what you do to your friends at a cocktail party?
Well, first of all, I don't really mention writing so much because I don't know. But that's a really good question because this is something I don't know. I find interesting is that I've like with reviews and stuff or from feedback from people who read it, the books or whatever. I've some one of one criticism I get like and it's come up a few times is that sometimes characters sound similar. So like in Suicide Forest, the characters are similar in Catacombs or whatever. And this is getting to the voice or whatever. So the voice that I found in Suicide Forest was first person, and I like a male. Because I found that a lot easier to write than trying to write a female, and so forth. And anyway, but the funny thing with that is that, and I'm really comfortable with that, and I like doing that. And with that, that's what it was with Suicide Forest, Catacombs, Helltown was different. That was third person and all over the place. And then, but then with Island of the Dolls. Anyway, the funny thing was. That people, some of the comments were that they're all similar in the sense that the protagonists are a bit similar. But I think what you have to realize, well, not as as a reader, I guess, or what I sort of what I'm thinking is that they're not like, yeah, they follow some of the characters follow stereotypes and they do whatever and they and they're a bit similar because that's my voice, but the stories are all different, and this series is based on the locations, right? So it's called The World's Scariest Places. Right? It's based on the locations, and if you take like a Lee Child's story or whatever, like every single novel of his, he's lucky enough that he can use the same protagonist, and nobody says, "Hey, Jack Reacher is the same in this book as he is in that book." Right? He's
Yeah.
using the same guy in each one, doing the same thing, solving different crimes, doing whatever. Like it's next to impossible to come up with like a different, completely different character for each one. I get you can do it, I imagine, but I mean that's not really the point. The point for my the scariest places is that it's the location, and then yeah, I use sort of like it's my voice, so I use these characters. But the last thing I'll say to that is that's why I like writing novellas, because when I finish one of these stories with these characters and that may be somewhat similar to the last, when I write a novella, I can break out of that series and do something completely different. So like in Rewind or Neighbors or Run or Box of Bones or whatever. All these stories, I think that like they're the protagonist is completely 100 like completely different than the last story, and that gives you a bit of freedom to do something different. But people, I'm just saying, like the point of that is, it's a series. World, if it's a series, you have to keep something similar. You can't just go completely off the rails. So yeah.
Talk about Rewind a little bit. It's what was the hook for that?
Yeah, oh, that was a weird one. A weird how I came up with that. It was so I was living in Broken Hill in Australia at the time, like just in the middle of Australia in a mining desert town. I was there for a couple of years, and I remember I used to walk from my place to the Coles, which is like what's the big supermarket in the States? I don't know. What's the big supermarket in the States?
Like a Walmart?
Yeah, okay, sort of like a Walmart. So it's a Kohl's over here, and I just did that to get out of the house because sometimes changing the environment is good. Like it because once you're sitting somewhere, if you're sitting at home, it's so easy to just slack off. But if you're are going to the internet or whatever, but if you're sitting in like a supermarket, for 2 hours. You have to sort of work for 2 hours. But I used to walk to Burger King or Hungry Jack's, it's called over here, or up to the supermarket. So I was walking one day, and Broken Hill is sort of like, I don't know, just, well, it's a desert town, so it's totally different. And I was thinking about what if, like, how did that idea came? What if you were, what if, because nobody knew me in Broken Hill. I was a foreigner, and I just came in for a year, and I was thinking when I was walking up to the store one day, what if like people really didn't know you? Like, what if you had this different past or whatever? And that doesn't really make a good story, but then I started thinking of the sci-fi elements of it, which if people read Rewind, they'll find there's a big twist in the end. And then once you have a hook like that, and I guess that was a hook, like what if you're completely a different person than what people think you are? And then it went from that to the whole sci-fi element, and then there's the Rewind and the guy who this and what he did and everything. I guess I won't say anything more because that's the story and it's a short story. But yeah, it was just one of those days. I was walking up, it was a big sunny day, and I was walking to the Kohl's, the supermarket, to sit down and write. And I didn't really belong in Broken Hill as a foreigner, and I had those thoughts going, and I just thought, yeah, what if you're someone totally different than what people thought.
Or even yourself a little bit, maybe.
Well, yeah. Well, then now we're getting deep.
Well, you mentioned the importance of reading, and so I'm curious, how much time do you spend reading, and then what do you read?
I honestly wish I read more. It's embarrassing. Like, my mom reads tons. That's how I actually got into writing, because my mom is such a big reader. There's always books around the house, and she had Dean Koontz, and that's what I read, growing up. And Stephen, she didn't have, I found Stephen King on my own, but my mom had like Dean Koontz and other stuff. And she always had books around the house, so I always started reading those. But the reason I said I was embarrassed is because I meet people who they're like, oh, I finished a book in like a week or a couple of days, or sometimes you'll read a column and they're like, oh, I read your book in a day. I've never read a book in a day. Takes like a month. Like, I don't know if I'm just a slow reader or whatever, but I used to, I grew up, I started on fantasy. I used to like fantasy a lot, like Terry Brooks. And I've always liked Stephen King, and I've sort of mixed it from there, but I'm not a fast reader, and I'd like to read more, because it really, if you're writing, it's your research, it's how you do things. So you, but I don't read very much. I don't like, I'd like to read more. And I've switched to a Kindle recently, which is pretty convenient because everything's right there, right on it. So now if I don't have a book with me, like on a train or in the car or whatever, I usually have a Kindle, so it makes reading easier. But I'm not an avid reader. Like, I like reading, and oh, this is the thing. Actually, I watch a lot of movies, so I think I get more like plot ideas and stuff from movies than I do from reading. I'm a big movie, I watch a lot of movies, but I'd like to pick up on reading. Like, I just don't do it enough.
My dad's a big reader too, and he'll read anything basically, but I find that he tends to gravitate toward genre works. So he likes murder mystery books and suspense books and fantasy books, but not as much horror. But he'd still do you, would you, Was your mom similar? And so, like, as a child, I could, there are just books all over the place, and I could just look at the covers and say, this looks interesting, and then kind of.
Yeah. My mom's sort of like, she, like I said, she read Dean Koontz, and but mostly is more like other like women fiction and stuff. But that's the thing. I sort of read some of those because they're lying around. But I've never been a big fan of the police, procedural type stuff. I don't know. It was never my thing. So I picked up. Yeah, then I've never thought of that, but that's a good question because I guess I picked up from the books lying around that I'm read like Dean Koontz and these horror things, and I never and I read some of the other ones like J.D. Robb or whatever that she, but I thought they were good, but I never thought like, oh, I need to go out and buy another one. So I guess I was always more attracted to the horror aspect because after I read like a Dean Koontz, like I started reading Stephen King, but then I like Richard Layman and Bentley Whittle and all these type of guys. But those were ones I found on by myself. I didn't read the ones that were around the house. So a bit of different taste. And the thing is too, like this is the whole problem, I guess, with me is that, like I said, I'm not a fast. I don't read a lot. Like if I could read a lot, I'd just read everything. But because I don't read that much, I sort of feel like when I pick up a book to read, it should be like it's sort of research in a sense for me. Like it should be what I'm writing, like not what I'm writing about exactly, but it should be in the genre because it's sort of research. And like if I'm going to read a book, it's sort of like this is what I'm going to be sort of, this is the way I'm writing. So I should be reading something like that because it's sort of research. So I don't really read women's fiction or whatever as much as, yeah, I just don't, not at all really anymore. But
Well, what about the idea that there's a university professor who wrote a book called Mutants and Mystics, and that was all about how sometimes this strange world that a writer conceives of comes off the page and into their life, you know. So, like the idea that the horror comes off the page, is horror something, you know, these strange ideas you have, is that something that stays pretty much in the books, or do you experience the kind of weirdness in your life that you write about?
zero. I'll tell you zero. And that's funny because I don't know. I'm just desensitized to it because when I read horror or when I watch a horror movie, like if this is funny because if I watch a horror movie with my wife, we'll be sitting there and she's freaked out and she's jumping and she can't watch it half the time. She's like she'll leave and I'll just be watching the movie myself. And I can't understand why people get. And then when I read reviews and people are like, oh, this is such a scary book, and this is scary, and it blows me away because I can't understand why they get so scared because it's like a book or it's a movie or whatever. But then I've sort of realized this recently, or not recently, but lately, like not lately even, but whatever. I've realized this is that what happens is that when you get into it, when you start writing about it, I guess, you sort of become familiar with it. With me specifically, like to answer your question again, I don't, it's not something that's part of my life, but when I read something or when I watch a movie, because I've been doing it for so long, like long enough that I lose the enjoy. I've sort of lost the enjoyment of, like, for example, and I'll get back to the horror thing in a sec. But when I used to read like fantasy books when I was a lot younger, I totally get immersed in this universe and just, and I loved reading it and not think anything. You'd be in, I'd be in it, and but then when I started writing, instead of reading, you sort of start deconstructing. So you're instead of reading like and just falling into the story, you're looking at like the sentence structure, and you're looking at, yeah, okay, I know why he's doing that. He's building this character, and what he's doing, and this is going to lead to that. And that when you just deconstruct it, So I think that happens when I watch like a movie or like a horror movie or when I read a horror book nowadays. I'm not drawn into the story like I used to be. Like I still can enjoy it, but I mean, I see what they're doing and I'm analyzing it. You know, but just like if you're an accountant and you have a page of like numbers in front of you, you know, like you're doing your work. So. It doesn't scare me. It's not part of my life, but I just sort of go with it and like it's I deconstruct it. And then, like I said, with my wife, when she watches it, I think she still gets really into it, and that's why it scares her and everything. So it's nothing to do with my personal life. Like I don't like you know obviously kill people or do anything like that. But it's all calculated. Like I'm like, hey, this would be a good idea for this, and this would work, and that would happen, and this is probably that's a good character trait, and this. So it's all mathematics, or you know, like it's not part of my life.
We're just about at the end here. What kind of hooks are grabbing you right now, and what are you working on, and what can we expect from you in the future?
Well, I just finished the Mountain of the Dead, and that's with the agents, so we'll see how that goes. And if it doesn't go with the agents, then I guess I'll publish it again myself. But that's a really good one. I really enjoy that. I enjoyed writing that one because it was based on the true story. Dyatlov Incident, if anybody's interested. 1959, Russia. Nine hikers go missing brutally. Destroyed. But aside from that, I'm doing a novella because that's been finished and it's called The Mailman. And this one was a bit weird, different because, like I said, and do different things after the main books. But I've always liked old rock and roll, like 80s rock and stuff, like, you know, like AC/DC, Guns N' Roses, and all that type of stuff. So I would thought about trying to write a novella about that. Didn't really know how to do it, but like a good story. But then I figured, like, what if there was, you know, some 1980s lonely housewife type person who is dissatisfied with her marriage, and somebody comes along, the mailman, who actually has nothing to do with the 80s rock or whatever, but that's a different thing that comes in, and she gets into an affair that spirals out of control. It's sort of like White Lies, I guess. I'm repeating stuff now, but that's what I'm just finishing that. I'm finishing that, and I have a couple more I'm thinking about after that before I get into a big novel again because it's you know I'm not it's just these little things are easy. Big novels are good. Like you're invested for a year, so it's sort of nice to take a break. But yeah, so it's The Mailman. That's the one it'll be out in like a month, I think. Something like that.
Well, that was 42 minutes. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Yeah, no problem, Doug. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You've been listening to Jeremy Bates on 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com. Definitely check out his work. You can find more information about him at his website, jeremybatesbooks.com. For more information about the Sync Book or our guests to check out past shows or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast and would like more, consider becoming a Sync Book Plus member. Some of the membership benefits include full access to the complete audio archive, discounts on books, behind-the-scenes scripts, bonus audio and video, as well as seasonal online hangouts with the hosts. All this and more can be found at thesyncbook.com/membership. Thanks so much. And the ego like to trick you into thinking that you are the center of the universe, but in truth, you are nothing but a dust mote in a never-ending shaft of dimming light.
My on a starry night. Pero ya no hay, ya no hay estrellas. Pero ya no hay.